Carrying over from our agenda item yesterday, we're going to also not an action item, and it is an update on the budget. And while the team reassembles itself at the desk, I'd like to welcome Judge Alan Harcastle, who is the incoming president of CJA. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chief.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chief Justice. So not to confuse anybody, but for the new members, I'm Kurt. He's Kurt, too. And I'm not Kurt. Yeah. I'm Zlatko Theodorovich.
T-O-O or Kurt, Roman numeral, too.
Yeah. Sometimes it's Kurt squared. So
okay.
we're going to give an overview of where we are on the budget at this point in time. And one point we need to emphasize is that the governor has the budget on his desk at this point. It's a point in time in terms of our understanding. To my knowledge, as of close of business yesterday, we still had not seen all the language as it pertains to the trailer bills, so it's a little bit of a work in progress for us. Again, the input that you've heard from us over the last 4 or 5 weeks is the fact that we were getting snippets of information, which made it very difficult for us to really, you know, organize our thoughts and trying to figure out exactly what was going to go on. So this is going to be a team approach where we're going to talk about what happened with the May revise and the original proposal of the $544 million reduction and what was in place before the May revise. Going to walk you through those steps and where we're at, specifically with the fund balance questions right now. So at that point, I'll turn it over to Zlatko and Kurt.
Good morning, Council. Members of the Council, apologize, I'm a little bit rusty right now. I just came back from Hawaii last night, so kind of shaking out.
Too many Mai Tais.
Too many emails, I think, is what the problem was.
He sent me an email and said, I'm having one for you, Jody.
Yes, indeed. Yes, as Kurt had discussed, at the May revision, the governor proposed a $544 million reduction, 540 targeted towards the trial courts. Of that, 240 would be offset by construction funds, and 300 million would be offset from the use of reserves. $4 million was associated with the change in retirement rates for state level judicial branch employees. Also proposed to eliminate fund balance as a major, major policy issue. Those are the sort of low points of the May revision as we knew it then. Now the budget bill, as it's currently before the governor, the $300 million still stands. The $540 million still stands. But there's been some changes to the way in which those dollars have been are being dealt with. Of the $300 million, $235 million of it is being allocated to trial courts based on the proportionate share of total statewide fund balances as of the end of this fiscal year. So to what point you have a 5%, 2%, 20% share of the fund balances, you would get that share of the $235. $50 million would be allocated to trial courts based on a pro rata share of their expenditure totals. The reason that the numbers don't add up to 300 is because they offset a part of the reduction with a $15 million reduction to the AOC and those funds redirected to the trial courts. Those $100 million that was part of the branch's proposal to the administration to use fund balances, that also is being pro rata allocation to the trial courts based on expenditures. I have had staff many, many questions from CEOs and folks asking, what does that mean? What does that mean? And so we've done the best we can, not a perfect analysis, but we try to give folks a sense, and we sent out last Friday a sort of what does this mean for you as a ballpark. It was a guesstimate, but it tried to give folks an understanding of where they think their allocations will go for the 12-13 and 13-14 fiscal years. We got feedback, you know, thank you very much. Oh, that doesn't work for us. So fund balances have changed. But again, it was our intent was to try and answer as many questions given the uncertainty of the budget process. But we think it's been helpful. We've gotten a lot of good responses, and I think everybody knows we're just trying to make it a best guess for folks to see what that means. Okay, going on. As I said, the $240 million as proposed by the administration is continuing in terms of a redirection of construction funds. There was a $4.7 million increase for the Courts of Appeal related to the court-appointed counsel program. We've mentioned the $4 million. The reduction was converted from something related to retirement changes because the legislature was not willing to go forward with that policy change. It's just an unallocated reduction with some reporting back to the legislature. The budget bill as proposed by the governor allocates the $350 million that was reduced last year in the same fashion for 12-13 as it was done for 11-12. There's some other budget bill adjustments. For example, there's an item related to assigned judges, and that it requires the use of judicial officers who may be available due to the closure or reduction in hours of courthouses prior to the use of the assigned judges program funding. Is that correct, Kurt?
That's right.
Got that one right. It does, at this point, give the council the authority to offset reductions to the trial courts to transfers from other funds. There's some issues with interpreters and who and how we can use those funds, some restrictions. They do include the plan that the council had discussed in terms of offsetting $200 million of prior year cuts, namely $50 million from 1732 construction funds. We've previously discussed the use of $62 million of CCMS funding, $23 million from the Modernization Fund to offset cuts. There's $15 million in savings from CCMS V2, V3. And we have the $50 million in additional filing fee revenue to help with prior cuts.
And let me interject and ask Kurt to explain, particularly as we had mentioned 15 minutes ago, about the merger of the Improvement Fund and the Modernization Fund. So, Kurt, you want to take that?
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. A couple of months ago, as we were starting to have some discussions following the governor's introduction of the budget in January and pre-May revise in the direction we wanted to start looking for solutions for the branch, one of the issues that I think had been hearing over in the building from a number of folks, but also internally, was looking at, is there a way to potentially streamline some of our funds? So historically, we've had the modernization fund, the improvement fund, and the trial court trust fund. And I don't think there was always total clarity on what was funded out of each of those funds. And there were different funding mechanisms on what was moved from the trial court trust fund to fund the funds, and as well as one was continuously appropriated and the other wasn't. So we started some negotiations with the legislature, I think all trying to be on the same page on the fact that we wanted to see some greater transparency, some greater clarity between these funds. And so I think part of the challenge was I couldn't really clearly explain why we had a mod fund and improvement fund that were each doing different things. So we sat down the course to have some discussions whether it would make some sense to merge those two funds, the mod fund and the improvement fund, and let those be the funds through which we would, the council would have the authority then to fund branch-wide, statewide initiatives for the trial courts. And then have greater clarity, I think, with the trial court trust fund, that fund would be intended to fund court operations. And I think both with many of the stakeholders in the Capitol and with legislative staff seem to think that would make some sense to do. So we did start down that course as these often happen quickly. There were a lot of discussions, but not until the sort of the time crunch really brought on the pressure to get the budget out did we get some consensus that we would in fact move in that direction. So the budget bill and trailer bill language will indeed merge those two funds, the mod fund and the improvement fund, and again with some stated clarity that those funds will be for the council for statewide initiatives. The other intent was to make sure that those programs that were statewide programs funded out of the trust fund, that those would then move over into the merge fund. And so I think we've got agreement to actually do it that way, but finance didn't think we were going, the Department of Finance, think we were going to be in a position to actually do the technical changes that we needed to do in the budget. But there will be, I think, language that will track that the trial court trust fund is intended to fund statewide initiatives, and that beyond anything that's currently funded would require an appropriation by the legislature, which I think makes complete sense. In that if we need to look for some additional funding, and particularly in these times of fiscal constraints, that we would be going back to the legislature and asking for additional dollars. At the same time, we'll go ahead and have those programs that will continue to be funded in the mod fund and the improvement fund. And what we agreed is over the course of the next year, we'll work on the language on how to actually do those transfers. We'll have some reporting language that will be related to that, so that any of the funds that are spent out of the trial court trust fund will report quarterly to the legislature and the Department of Finance how those funds will actually work. So in the end, I think this is a provision that will be...
Justice Hall has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kurt, I'm sorry to interrupt. I think you, what your explanation has been may have answered my question, but I want to make sure. There have been some reports that there was language in a trailer bill that would require the council to seek legislative approval before spending any trial court money on statewide projects. Has that gone away, or is that going to be the case?
So that's going to be the case, and that's going to be the language that will be associated with the trial court trust fund. So any spending out of the trial court trust fund, again, to bring that clarity that the trial court trust fund is to fund trial court operations. There will still be the discretion that the council will have on statewide initiatives in the mod fund and the improvement fund.
Thank you. Kurt, I obviously haven't had enough coffee because you've lost me a little bit. So the new language has to do with this, seeking this legislative approval is to be able to to allocate money out of the trust fund to the courts?
If any of the trial court trust fund dollars were to be used for any purpose other than trial court operations would require an appropriation by the legislature.
Okay, I wasn't quite clear on that. Just one other question, too. So with this new mod improvement fund, whatever it ends up being, will there be any authority for the council to carry forward fund balances from year to year in that fund?
Well, that fund is as established as a special fund would have a
fund
balance.
It has to be appropriated every year anyway.
Yeah, well, so we would have a fixed appropriation, but anything that's left over would be like any other state agency fund.
Great.
Like currently the mod fund and the improvement fund have fund balance.
Right, okay.
And the trust fund has
I wanted to make sure that they were not also saying that every year you have to spend every dollar in every single fund that you had, the trial courts and the AOS and the judicial council have to spend every dollar.
So we call, as you mentioned, fund balances, that in the May revise, the proposal was basically to zero out fund balances by the start of the 13-14 fiscal year. And there's been some recent developments that I'm going to ask Kurt to fill the council in on those developments as we understand it at this point in time.
So the process right now in the legislature, as you've all probably read, the governor and legislative leadership, majority party legislative leadership, have reached an agreement on the budget. On Monday, The Senate will take up a budget bill, Junior, along with the trailer bills. They expect that those will be passed on Monday. They will go over to the Assembly, as was the case with the budget bill last week and the trailer bills. There won't be any hearings in the Assembly on those bills, and then they will go to the floor on Tuesday, after which then the governor will have those bills. I think the deadline on for him signing the bill is Wednesday, so I anticipate that he'll have a signature on that. He'll have the adjustments made in the subsequent budget bill, and we'll have the trailer bill. So I think with the intent to be done with the budget next week. A couple of pieces then related that were being tweaked from the budget bill in our budget. I think most of you are aware of the provision now on interpreters. There was one tweak, to be clear, I think to make the and the or in there, but that's as far as they were willing to go. There was language in there that would give the council the discretion to redirect funds or redirect between funds. I think there will be some language added in that provision that would not permit redirection from the Supreme Court, the Courts of Appeal, or the Habeas Corpus Resource Center. There will be some scheduling changes that I mentioned on the merge fund issue. And, David, I do believe we will see the Santa Clara Court added in for the moving ahead in construction in budget year. So those are the pieces I think we know right now in the budget bill that will be tweaked.
As far as the reserves and the
so on the reserves too, the language that we're hearing is that you might recall that originally there was going to be at the state level a 3% reserve. That now is at the court level, as we understand it, is going to be a 1% reserve, and then 2% will be held by the council. 1.5% of that will be available for allocation during the August time frame. We're trying to get that changed to a later date because that's just not going to be very workable for the courts. There'll be another iteration with 0.5% that will occur in March. We should mention that those are items that will have to go back before the budget working group in terms of some direction that we're going to be seeking from the council in terms of how that whole process is going to work. Another issue that's at play that we're working with Justice Breneers, Justice Ashman Gerst, Judge Moss, and Judge Herman that we just had a phone call on this morning is $5.1 million that's still hanging out there for the CCMS wind-down. Recall that the council took the action to allocate $8.66 million in 12-13 money for those purposes. ISD and CCMS have done a good job of sharpening their pencils. That figure is down to $5.1 million right now. What's outstanding with the legislature is a further itemization of the costs that are associated with leveraging the technology associated with CCMS V4, and what we're talking about there are the portals and e-filing. So that effort is in play. In the next 4 weeks, we hope to have those FSRs completed and all the dollars that can then be shared with the legislature to try and reserve that $5.1 million going forward. There was a $30 fee increase for court reporters and civil proceedings for actions lasting less than 1 hour. A 20% increase in the appellate first filing fees, which we think will generate around $1 million. There's also language that we're working on from a cash flow purpose with the Department of Finance and the legislature on the issue of if courts don't have the ability to pay their bills, what options are available for us. So the proposal that the governor's office immediately endorsed was to be able to dip into the two construction funds for cash flow purposes. That's another item that will have to go before the budget working group in terms of how that's going to be set. In terms of going back to the 2% state reserve, again, to emphasize, there'll have to be policy considerations that will be brought before the budget working group and for E&P in terms of how that's going to be administered.
And just to be clear, so those provisions will be in the, we anticipate will be in the trailer bill as opposed to what we'll see in the budget bill.
So on another closing.
Oh. One moment, Kurt. Judge Wesley and then Kim Turner.
Could I just go back for a second? Because you went through this pretty quickly on the reserves.
Yeah.
So are there three different formulas for computing the reserves, one for the 235, one for the 50, and one for the 100? Or are there two formulas?
There are two formulas.
Okay.
One is based on share of the fund balance, and one is based on share of expenditures.
So the first, the 235 and the 50 are based on?
The 235 is reserve-related.
Okay.
And the, well, let's call it 150, is related to expenditure.
Okay, so those are the two different
formulas.
And the 235, do you know whether it's point in time yet or they're going to go
back?
We
anticipated that it's this most recent close will come in a few days. So it'll be the June 30th, 2012 fund balance.
And you really won't know what that is till August, though, right?
Right.
Okay.
That's part of the problem of them wanting us to start allocating immediately is we won't know where we are. So the only one option they were talking about was having a sort of preliminary allocation and a secondary allocation, but we didn't think that that was necessarily workable.
There was some discussion at some points in time with the Department of Finance about the need to do a true-up. Since the books won't be closed really in time for once the new budget year is started up, that's where we're looking for language in the trailer bill to exactly see how that's going to carry itself out.
Mm-hmm. Kim Turner.
So I have a couple of questions. The first one is about this potential to stretch the spend down of the reserves over 2 years. And we talked about this at our meeting, I believe, yesterday. But if the reserve balances are less than 235, then that provision is essentially moot because they're going to go get 235 out of I don't know how they'll get the 235 out of reserves if 235 does not still exist at the time that the June 30th books close. Is there any understanding of how that would work?
Well, fundamentally, our general fund has been reduced. So it won't be going and getting reserves.
Well, I realize you're not getting reserves,
yeah.
But in other words, if the trial courts do not have $235 million in reserves at June 30th this year, how will the difference between what we do have and what's
identified? I think it's merely math, mm-hmm. is that if we had 100 and you have 5%, you'll get 5% of the 235.
Okay.
So it will be that's how I see it, and this way we've discussed it. It's for the purposes of calculating your share of the 235.
Got it.
Not that they would necessarily say that you will use fund balance.
Right.
And Kim, to your point there, if as a whole the trial courts do not have $235 million in your fund balance, you still have a $235 mm-hmm. million reduction.
Correct.
So it may not come from your fund balance. It will come from a reduction in operations in some manner.
Great. Got it.
Yeah, then that's how our spreadsheet was done. It was just a calculation of your allocation change. Whether or not you had fund balance available to backfill it is still yet to be seen. But
okay.
It was just your allocation goes down. What you have to backfill it is what we're not sure of yet.
And then I have another kind of minor question about this $30 court reporter fee, you know, for matters lasting less than 60 minutes. So I assume the language is really broad there. They haven't told us how to go about the process of collecting that, whether to assess it when the motion is filed or to collect it in the courtroom or exactly how the vagaries of that whole system will work. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, because that will be yet another hurdle that the trial courts will have to figure out,
mm-hmm.
Especially since many of our courts no longer have civil reporters, and I don't know exactly how that's going to work.
Judge Kaufman and Judge Rosenberg.
Kurt and Zlatko, Kurt too, I guess. And Zlatko, you weren't here yesterday. I'm just confused. For some reason... Thank you.
I didn't say anything, Ira.
Is there a motion?
I'll second.
I was nice to you yesterday. No, seriously, I'm confused about something. In the past, we've always taken all the budget reductions and increases by your percentage of the budget. For instance, you know, my small county has like less than 1% of the total budget. I'm taking more of a cut on the 235 than is my proportionate share. Can you give me an example of like, for instance, I know we're taking a big cut. We're taking like 1.9%, which is not a lot of money, but still it's a big cut to me versus some other courts. Can you give me an example of what the differences are? And also, where did this come from? How did this occur? Why are we doing it in this one instance and not others? I mean, there's no consistency in my mind. That's where I'm confused.
I didn't bring the charts, and I can distribute those to the members.
And I think Jody wanted to...
Judge Kaufman, if I can address that. We would not have... The formula for the $235 million would not have been our preference, if you will, and you're absolutely correct, that the Trial Court Budget Working Group, as well as the Council in the past 3-4 years of budget reductions, that's not the formula that you have utilized. It's typically done on a prorated basis and or, based on the resource allocation model, if you will, for the more under-resourced courts, and taking that into consideration. This was a formula that somehow the legislature came up with. In your case, and I'll use you as an example, or the easiest example for me is, you know, if you have 30% of the branch budget or the trial court budget, whatever that is, you would get 30% of the 235. This formula, what it does is it actually penalizes those courts that have a larger fund balance, if you will, so that if you're 1% of the trial court budget, but your fund balance is 5% of the 562 of fund balance at the start of this fiscal year, you get that higher percentage and higher share of the 235, which is the exact reason why that's not something we would ever advocate. It came from the legislature.
But the legislature got it from somewhere.
But I'll just add one thing. I mean, that was really intended to be a mitigation. Because as the governor was proposing, the administration was proposing that it would have been the entire amount would have been based on the amount of reserves. So this was intended to mitigate that somewhat and spread the cuts based on the prorated expenditures.
Judge Rosenberg, and then Judge Ellsworth.
Thanks for the presentation. Clearly, the biggest single issue for trial courts is what happens to the fund balances. When the governor originally proposed the May revision, the plan was to ensure that trial courts spend down the fund balances to zero by June 30th of 2013. It appears now that we're looking at a two-year track, which is considerably better. But do we know any more about the details regarding this two-year track? Or will it all be revealed on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday?
or before, potentially. I have not seen language on that provision, but I also don't believe that there will be much guidance. In other words, how much would have to be in year one spent down leading into year two? I doubt that will happen.
Less guidance is good.
Yes. No, I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay. Judge Ellsworth?
I don't think you're confused at all, Judge Kaufman. I understand that this model has been foisted upon us. My question is, because of the inequity that it creates, is there an opportunity for us then to dialogue about how to fix that inequity at the trial court budget working group level and at the council's level so that we can at some point start to look at not only as this grossly create a situation for those that have been provident and who have worked hard, many of which are the most under-resourced counties, somehow taking a look at where do we go from here, and also what do we do in order to rectify some of the inequities that are created, gross inequities that are created by this.
I think there will be opportunity, but we're going to have to wait for the dust to settle. We haven't seen language, so we don't know what's prohibited and what's going to be permissive. We've all been promised language, but we haven't seen it. We're awaiting that email that contains the language. I've been hearing that I'm going to get language from folks since yesterday morning and phone calls. So I think there is a dust settling. There's a time to where we can make the real demand with numbers, but until we see the language, we're really at a loss. But I'm very hopeful that we're able to look at what happens this year, look at this language, and be able to come back with a response that better serves the courts equitably.
Two other points I'd like to make. One is an omission, if you will, in that the May revise had talked about the formation of a working group to take a look at some of the issues. There is no language that we're aware of that's going to be in place. I think there's an understanding that this will be a working group that, if formed, will be at the direction of the Chief Justice and will be moving forward. It was interesting in discussions that Kurt Zlotko and I had with the Department of Finance about what are you really expecting to get out of this. We had a number of phone calls, many of which had us asking the questions, can you articulate to us exactly what you want? And there would be a 10 or 15 second pause where they really don't know where they're headed with that. One other final point, at least, that I would like to make in terms of addressing some of the issues with the that were found in the SEC report is the fact that under Jody's direction, we more or less at this point, maybe the four musketeers at this point, are working very, very closely with each other in terms of transparency and making sure that we can better articulate where the budget's going, what the issues are going to be, and we'll be giving the council periodic reports on exactly where we are at any given point in time with the budget.
Judge Kaufman?
Just to kind of end it, could I just ask for you to come up with two sets of figures? One is the figures on the 235 as proposed, you've given us already. And then give me a set of figures of what would have happened if we split the 235 at pro rata as we've always had in the past.
Just treat it all
we can see a difference.
We can treat it all the same. And
no, so I can see the difference. I want to see.
Yeah, we can do the two
scenarios. And then that would be given to the budget working group so they can see the inequality or inadequacy or whether
we'll email it to you today and we'll get it out to everybody as an additional scenario, not just the budget working group, but all the court staff.
David Yamasaki.
Yes, thank you, Chief. I just wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about the Santa Clara Courthouse. 2 weeks ago, I would say that the project was dead in the water, and a lot of work was done since that time. And I just wanted to say thank you. It was kind of a rescue mission, so to speak, that you, Jody, and Kurt and Zlotko and Lee Willoughby's team put forth to allow this project to go forward. So I want to just say thank you very much on behalf of Santa Clara Court.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments, Sue?
What happened to the issues with regard to asking for the trailer bills or being able to be more efficient to reduce some of the things that were required?
Yeah.
And was there any discussion about the public contracting law because that's so workload intensive?
Yes, good question. Thanks for the reminder. There were some early discussions about the public contract code, not on the table. There was absolutely no interest in the legislature in pulling back at all, even fixing a few dates for reporting. No interest whatsoever. As you recall, we put together a large work group. Donna Herskowitz in our office had really coordinated an effort through a couple of work groups to come up with a list of efficiencies that we could pose to the legislature and the governor that we would like to see included in the budget. And by the time we got done, I think there were about 17 of those issues that we took over across the street to have some discussion with legislative staff initially and walk through with them. There was some interest in a few of them and not interest in others. The administration, we did the same thing with them. They weren't overly excited about those provisions either. They were not going to get in the way of those if the legislature would agree to put them in. And in the end, legislative staff had determined that a number of those issues presented policy issues. And as you know, we never do policy in trailer bills. That those presented policy issues and that we should bring them up in separate bills. So we will be looking at probably some additional efficiencies that we may want to include and how we may want to package those in some legislation to try and move next year, whether that's in a single bill or in a package of bills. In the end, they were unwilling to take any of those for inclusion.
But the Department of Finance said that they would look to discuss them again in the fall if we wanted to pursue them at that time. So I think there's two different tracks, right, Kurt, as far as Ledge on one side and DOF on the other.
Right. Miriam Krinsky, then Justice Baxter, then Judge Rubin.
Yeah. Kurt, I had Zlatko, I had a quick question on the court-appointed counsel item. I know that we've been running at a yearly shortfall on that and that there's been a working group that's been looking at some of those issues. I'm just curious, that's, you know, that's such a vitally important area in terms of ensuring that kids have, you know, the representation and parents that they need in these systems. Is that figure sufficient to meet the shortfall, or are there...
This is for the... Which of a
community? Oh, okay. All right.
We get left.
So,
back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So no changes were being made ultimately in dependency counsel.
Okay. Okay. That's the Court of Appeals. All right. Mm-hmm. And... All right. I mean, is the shortfall in terms of dependency counsel with all the other cuts going to result in concerns? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have only a limited amount of resources available in those funds.
Yeah, and as you recall, I think the work group, Judge O'Malley, had ultimately recommended that we come back to the initial base of 103, I think it was. 104 almost.
Yeah, I think
that.
Close.
It was my sense that there was also some talk over time about a legislative ask on that, but I take it that's not going to happen.
Well.
Okay.
Justice Baxter.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, the chief's invitation to the director of finance to address the judicial council, what was it, a couple months ago?
Was
excellent. First of all, we were able to hear what the governor's position was, what the Department of Finance, what their position was. And we were also able to express our concerns as to at least some of the major issues, the working group issue, the spreading it over 2 years versus one. Once the dust settles and we are able to evaluate what remains unfair about what has been done, I wonder whether it might be advisable to re-invite the Director of Finance to continue that dialogue, because I think when they hear it directly from members of the council, I think it has an effect. So I would suggest that.
Would you suggest that in October, at our October meeting? August is probably too
how
soon,
long does it
wouldn't
take
you think?
The dust to settle.
Years.
I don't know.
So Justice Baxter, we've had discussions, Jody, myself, Kurt, and Zlatko, about there were some things that were less than perfect in this last several months, and there's been some discussions about how to strategize in terms of reapproaching both the Department of Finance as well as the legislature in terms of getting us a better seat at the table. This has been a very frustrating experience for all of us and all of you combined, and we're looking for some better solutions in next fiscal year.
And Justice Baxter, I've had several discussions with Ana Mata Santos, the Director of Finance, and she has been very clear that she would appreciate continuing to have discussions with the branch and the council. She's fully aware of the challenges that face the trial courts in particular with the fund balance issue. So I'd be more than happy to, on behalf of the chief, invite her back.
And I think in terms of timing, it should be something like October, whether the dust is settled or not, because they'll start gearing up on the January budget.
Right.
October.
For October. Okay.
I think I have, after Justice Baxter, I had Judge Rubin and then Judge Friedman.
Dave Rubin, CJA. Thanks for the great presentation. I guess, I mean, maybe I missed it, but do we know where the legislature, kind of in response to or following up on Judge Coffman's question, where the legislature got this formula for allocating the 235, how they came up with it? And my second, I guess, as a comment to Kurt, CJA has already started to compile a list of efficiencies, if you will, in trial court procedure that we think would save substantial money. And if we could share that with you, or if we could collaborate on that, I think we might be able to come up with a package that could really do some good.
Yeah, I, without having given it a lot of thought now, that I think that would be exactly the right thing to do is that we should put together a package. We should look again at some of the issues that we maybe had decided not to move forward and put them in a bill, and we can figure out how to do that. You know, again, whether it's a single bill or a package, and how to move those, or talk to the administration, because I think if there would be some interest, we could get those in the January budget as well. And absolutely, we should coordinate those. Again, I don't know how they landed ultimately on that split between the 235 and the 150 on how that was going to be divvied up. Again, the administration's approach was that all of it was going to be based on the amount of reserves, and I think they just looked at, as often happens in the compromises, as a place to split the difference, and so drew a probably arbitrary line on that.
I mean, staff on the Assembly and the Senate budget, they get together and they just brainstorm on how things happen, and sometimes we're involved and sometimes we're not. In this case, you know, we just all of a sudden hear this is how it's going to happen. But, you know, I was part of that before. You sit and you just think about how could we do this differently? What about this issue? What about that issue? So it's just sometimes just a brainstorming and what you can get agreement on. And I assume that's how they wanted to deal with the overall cuts to the branch.
And we're so glad now that Zlotko can really fully appreciate our pain.
Yeah, absolutely. This was the worst ever.
Judge Friedman, and then Mayor Beth Todd.
Thank you, Chief. Obviously, the end result is not a good one. But when the May revise came out and the budget deficit was $16 billion, the handwriting was on the wall. And I hope that everyone in the branch understands what a heroic effort the four musketeers and the chief made to mitigate as much as possible the impact of these horrendous cuts, which we knew from day one we weren't going to be able to avoid. The state is in dire straits, and the cuts are devastating so much of what is important, including the judicial branch. But we were able to mitigate some of the most onerous aspects of the cuts, the opportunity to spread out the sweep of the reserves to 2 years is a considerable advantage for the trial courts. We've protected our self-governance. And so I think that the lesson to be learned is that we need to further the relationships that we have. And echoing what Justice Baxter said, I think we have achieved a lot in developing a relationship with the Director of Finance. And building upon that is only going to work to our branch's advantage. Those that thought we should have, you know, gone to the barricades and fought and launched all the missiles at the governor and Department of Finance, you know, that would have perhaps made us feel good that we were standing up for ourselves. But in the short run as well as the long run, we're much better off having good, ongoing, positive relationships so that we can make the best of whatever the realities are. We unfortunately are not in a position to control our fate. The other two branches have that power, but we can do the best we can to protect our position, and I think we did. And so I think that the chief and our four musketeers deserve great praise, not only from the council, but from the entire branch for what they've been able to achieve.
But missiles.
Justice Baxter?
Yeah, Kurt number two made a brief reference to the efficiencies and efforts that went through the PJs and others. Of course, this was coupled with the budget bill, so some of these were revenue enhancements, et cetera. And the... as far as anything major, the pushback was, well, that's policy, so it can't be part of the budget bill. But we do have, I mean, we're really in a very difficult situation, and some of the sacred cows that we have within the branch are no longer sacred. And I think we really need to start focusing on some of these fundamental things that perhaps 2 years ago we wouldn't even think about. So I think and this is something that I think needs to be generated amongst the lawyers. I'm thinking in terms of peremptories and being able to have more trials with less courtrooms, and not living in a perfect world. There's that issue. There's the issue, perhaps on the civil side, of having electronic recording. So at least there is some recording of civil cases, as opposed to none at all. And I think some of these sacred cows really have to be reexamined, and whether it's the council that initiates that or what. I mean, I don't think this is something that should be imposed on others. I think it's something that needs to be discussed among the lawyers. I know on peremptories, for instance, virtually every attorney group is opposed to limitations, whether it's the DAs, the defense lawyers, consumer lawyers, or the civil defense side. They're all opposed to any restriction on it. But you know, we have to look at it in the real real world. So all I'm suggesting is that maybe this is the time for a reevaluation based on the context that we're in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Mary Beth Todd?
I have a question. Given that this appears to be getting us on more of an even par with all the other executive branch departments, is it anticipated that we will be utilizing the budget change proposal process a lot more and that we're going to really have to get back into that? And it occurs to me that that comes up in September and will be fast approaching as well. And do we need to start giving some thought to how we will be approaching that process differently? And do you anticipate the trial court budget working group to be the avenue to kind of explore that?
Yeah, we were. That's one of our questions to the administration is, now you don't have a funding, we don't have any fund balances that you would expect us to use for something that
we'd have to come to you like other state agencies and ask for these funds. So it was going to be something that we were going to discuss with Judge Rosenberg about collecting those ideas and forwarding them to the getting them through the council process and then to the Department of Finance in early September.
I think that'd be helpful to start working on that.
So I know that we are waiting for language and further news, and I am confident that as we learn more, we will share it with council and also everyone in the branch as it becomes firm, and that this information will be on our website. And as you know, you're always free to call. See, I'm easy to volunteer up the Four Musketeers. But we are waiting for specifically for information to see what this language looks like. So we are very concerned what the language looks like. We've been talking in concept. And as a result of talking in concepts, all of us have our hackles up because concepts are, we're wordsmiths because words matter to us. And so as that becomes known to us, we will make every effort to let you know where we are as soon as we get that information and what it looks like, so that you may share it with your benches and your constituents as well. I want to say I can't thank you enough for all the late hours, walking the halls, making the calls, the early breakfasts, the discussions, the phone calls. You know, it was particularly difficult. I think every call I made, I started with, well, since I'm not at the table, I have to call you again. And eventually they got the point that I was not at the table, and it generated about numerous calls from me, and they were always gracious in the legislature and the governor's office in terms of taking the calls and hearing the concepts and working them through and checking back, and the phone tree was active. But I know you all devoted countless hours, and including the ad hoc committee, you had to work with some late hours and passionate calls and then language and principles that were fluid. And ultimately, we're all crossing our fingers as to what that looks like. And the presiding judges and rallying the presiding judges, Presiding Judge Rosenberg, can't tell you enough how important that was to have our voice out. Marianne O'Malley with Benchbar Media getting out there and constantly beating the drum about the branch. And this isn't just about what happened in May. This is about what's been going on since last year and the efforts at restoration. The attorneys, State Bar, everyone's been in there pulling for the branch. And my gratitude is immense for all of that. And then when the dust settles, we're going to gear up again and start all over. Any closing thoughts? Jody, Kurt, Zlatko?
Hey, Chief, I just want to reemphasize that point that you made. It really was a great team effort with the presiding judges and Judge Rosenberg on keeping folks organized and making their visits in the legislature, and Judge O'Malley with the Bench Bar Coalition and the Open Courts Coalition,
CJA,
really formed around this year, that's right, and which is a group I think we will continue to have with us advocating on the branch, and CJA absolutely.
I also want to commend Alan Carlson for pulling together all of the court execs.
Yes.
They were absolutely instrumental in assisting us. It was a great partnership, Chief.
It was a little unwieldy at times, but it was effective.
Could I just say, Chief, if I may?
Of course.
It really was a great effort, top to bottom, from the chief down to the judges in the trenches. It was really gratifying to see a very united branch working very hard. The only thing we lacked is what Judge Friedman mentioned, the missiles. We don't have any missiles. Clearly, the legislative and the executive branch control the money, and in the dire straits that we're in, they did what they did. I'm just really gratified that the team was able to salvage some positive results in a very negative situation.
You're here. You're here. Thank you for the presentation.
Keep hearing that, oh, you're just kicking the can down the road and you've got to make structural changes. Yet any time structural kinds of changes are mentioned, we get shot down, a lot of the times by the lawyers. Yet it's the lawyers that are complaining about the courtrooms being closed and things, you know, slowing down. It could take 4 or 5 years again. But is there some way to move Justice Baxter's suggestions. For example, no jury trials and misdemeanors where the sentence is going to be less than 6 months, because the reality is that defendants are doing about a minute and a half before they're checked in and then checked out, reducing the number of jurors, reducing the number of peremptories. Is there anything that we can do to move it forward, to these proposals, these thoughts?
I think that we may have an opportunity to discuss some specifics on that when we get into a working group mode about the concepts that have been in this branch about improvement. And as Justice Baxter has said, and as Justice Ashman Gerst has said, we are reexamining old assumptions and principles because we are in a new era, and we have a governor and a financial situation and a legislature that demands it. And we want to be able to craft those changes instead of having them imposed on us by another entity. So I am looking forward to a creation of a working group with these component parts to bring that in the next legislative session, or parts of it in the legislative session.
And I do think the bar particularly has been really a good partner this year, not only getting out and doing the work, but, the civil bar, as Chris Dolan mentioned yesterday to you all, I think, sitting down and really hammering out, another year of fee increases and coming up with the $50 million for the courts this year was really big. And I think your point is exactly the right one. As we start looking at, less and less being available in court services, that there's going to be more and more on the table for those kinds of compromises. But I think we really did set up a good working relationship with them again. Sometimes a little more challenging with the criminal bar than it is the civil bar, but I think we've got a good framework to keep those discussions going with them.
Yes. I know we're trying to move on to a different agenda item, but I just wanted to add to what Justice Ashman Gerst said. And I know that so much is being done to educate the legislature and the executive branch about our court customers' needs. Maybe the bar members can join us in educating those entities about the fundamental constitutional right that people have to jury trials and misdemeanors and peremptory challenges for jurors. So rather than us losing the backbone of what we're here for, that they will understand they need to pay for it.
Thank you. Thank you. I note that we would normally take a break. Oh, I'm sorry. Angela Davis.
Just about the jury trials, the United States Supreme Court has said that there is no constitutional right to a jury trial if you're facing less than 6 months in prison. And indeed, in the state of New York and in the federal system, there is no such right. It's the California Constitution that requires the jury trials for those misdemeanor cases. And I would be very interested in participating in efforts to get California kind of in line with some of these issues. And I realize it's very controversial. Encroaching on the sacredness of jury trials is a sacred cow, but I think in this climate we need to look at it.
Thank you. I see many interested parties who I can call on to be part of that multi-component working group. Thank you.